Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide at least half of the playing field. Because there's no explaining what your imagination can make you see and feel. Somebody must be really hypnotized.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And now our very special guest for the rest of the program will be Richard Dolan. We're going to talk about government secrecy, UFOs. I'm also going to get Richard's take on, you know, this TR-3B, this what could be a tactical reconnaissance plane, looks like a triangle. How does it fly? Some say it's anti-gravity. Others say it's nuclear-powered. We're going to take a look. We'll be back in a moment. Richard Dolan holds an MA in history from the University of Rochester and a BA in history from Alfred University. He earned a certificate in political theory from Oxford University and was a Rhodes Scholar finalist. Prior to his interest in anomalous phenomena, Richard studied Cold War strategy, Soviet history, and international diplomacy. In 2000, he published a 500-page study, UFOs in the National Security State. This is the first volume of a two-part historical narrative of the national security dimensions of the UFO phenomenon from 1941 to the present. He has published numerous articles on anomalous phenomena, science, and the intelligence community for UFO magazine. In 2003, he helped to found the Phenomena, a magazine dedicated to the leading-edge issues pertaining to science and society. He has been appearing on many television documentaries and radio shows and has been a featured speaker at numerous conferences. Richard continues to research and write Volume 2 of UFOs and the National Security State. Richard, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you?
Hi, George. Great. I'm very happy to be on, and I'm actually awake now.
See, I told you when I met you up there in San Jose, I was going to get you on the show for a full program.
Oh, this is awesome. I'm really grateful for the opportunity.
With your kind of background in all kinds of things, as it has to do with history and international diplomacy, Cold War strategy, how in the heck did you get interested in UFOlogy?
Yeah, thanks for asking. There's one thing that I've always had a strong interest in, even way, way back, long before I did anything with UFOs, which was always power, politics, issues pertaining to secrecy and this sort of thing. I guess that's always an interest of mine. But I backed into the UFO field, truthfully, about 10 or 11 years ago, and I was working on a PhD in history at the University of Rochester at that time. And having nothing to do with UFOs, I was basically studying the Truman administration, and I don't know what it was. It was 1994, and was I bored? Was I just kind of fed up with doing my normal stuff? I strolled around the internet back then, Usenet, found some people who were talking about UFOs somewhat intelligently. There was some discussion on James Forrestal, the first Secretary of Defense, and connecting him to UFOs. And this was absolutely new to me at the time. I had read Forrestal's diaries. I'd read some biographies of him, and I can tell you, there are no academic studies that would connect James Forrestal to the matter of UFOs. And it really struck me, I remember this still to this day, how odd it was. I felt like I was living in a schizophrenic society. You got this official truth on the one side where none of this stuff is supposed to be real. And then here are some very well-informed, seemingly well-informed people who were taking this quite seriously. So that really got me started. And I just started diving into there, did a very comprehensive literature search. The one thing that allowed me to do my book was that I was very methodical from the beginning, and I just took a lot of notes. Next thing I knew, I had an enormous stack of pretty well-organized notes, and I thought, you know what? I was looking for a book like what I wrote. I wanted to find a book that dealt with a kind of a straightforward historical narrative without too much grandstanding. It's, you know, what happened, then what happened, then what happened from a military point of view. Did the military take UFOs seriously? At first, I was simply thinking in the 1940s and 50s, did they or did they not? My feeling was if they did, even if it was a mistake, even if the whole thing turned out to be hallucinations or whatever, wouldn't it still be worthy of historical analysis?
Sure.
Right, and there was none. And of course, what I discovered very quickly is that this was taken very, very seriously, and not simply as a hallucinatory phenomenon, and not even simply as what appeared to be classified projects, but it seemed to be taken seriously for very, very, for very understandable reasons. And that just snowballed into my book.
And the more you got into it, the more fascinated you became?
Got sucked right into the field, yes.
Yep. I mean, but me too. Yeah. Well, I'll talk with you about three things before we really get into the subject matter tonight.
Sure.
One, of course, is I got to get your reaction to the ABC special on UFOs. What did you think about it?
Yeah, well, I hadn't written anything about it beforehand. A few people had asked me what do you think would happen and so on. I had written an article some months ago on UFOs in the media, and I had said in that article that it's just not going to happen. I mean, there are media such as like the cable stations, there's Coast, there are other venues for this, but you're not going to get one of the major networks, ABC or mm-hmm. NBC or whatever. They're just not going to do this in a manner that will imply some kind of forthcoming disclosure of this topic. It's not going to happen. And what I said would happen, I think, is what did happen, that it would be a kind of blow the balloon up a little bit, and then you deflate it the second half, which is essentially, I think, what they did. And you end up with a kind of he said, she said kind of scenario.
Which is interesting, too, because their first hour, their ratings were very, very high. The second hour, their ratings started to taper off.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I think the second, Roswell was the low point of it. The treatment of Roswell, I thought, was very unsatisfactory. On the other hand, there were some good things. And we have to remember, you know, the people who listen to Coast and myself and you, if you take the country as a whole, you know, their knowledge of UFO topic from 0 to 10, I think most people are near 0 or a 1 at most, we may be at the high end of that spectrum. And if the ABC special got you to a 3 or a 4, it's easy for us to say, well, they didn't do 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9. On the other hand, for a lot of people, I think that this was very strong stuff. Having said that, I think that there was definitely a strong element of spin involved in the ABC special. And by that, I simply mean you'll notice there were absolutely no credible references to any kind of government cover-up or
right.
conspiracy of any sort. Nothing about Area 51 or S4, for example. Nothing about black world technology. This is very, very important for the UFO phenomenon, and that was all just off.
And, you know, if I had to make guess, I would say they had 11.6 million viewers, which is pretty good numbers overall for that kind of a show. And they were able to produce it much cheaper than you could a normal television show that would be on in a two-hour time period. So they saved money, and they made money on this. But to me, most of the people, those 11,600,000 people who watched it, and, you know, at any given time we have 5 to 10 million listeners on Coast to Coast, very well educated. They understand the UFO field. They know where it's headed. They know what's going on. I think a lot of those 11,600,000 people, Richard, that watched that ABC special already knew this information. They already knew about Roswell, and they have made up their own minds about that. So, unfortunately, what the program was an elementary program on UFOs, but everybody, I think, that wanted to watch it, they had learned these things years ago. They needed to elevate people. I mean, we've gone, yeah. This whole society has gone beyond Roswell. Everybody knows something happened at Roswell. I mean, they
True.
Needed to go beyond that.
Yeah, the first half, I think, was much better in this regard because I think most people did not know about the Illinois sighting of the various police officers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was pretty well done overall. And then there was the interesting case from the 1968 Minot Air Force Base, close encounter by military personnel. I think that was very interesting. And I thought that the witnesses came across very well. I'm guessing most people were not aware of that. But, yeah, the opportunity was there to do something truly, a true public service, and, of course, ABC. But they just couldn't go there. My feeling is One reason is maybe just so crass as to prime the pump and get the public ready for the Steven Spielberg movie, War of the Worlds, coming up in a few months.
Which is not going to be like the radio show. Not
at
all.
I would imagine not.
No. This one's going to be very different, with a different kind of an outcome as well. They may have the same title, but I think it's going to be very different. You mentioned the police officers in Illinois. I was in St. Louis at the time when that happened, and fielded some phone calls from people, too. Nobody really knew what they were seeing, other than what they did not say is most of these sightings are occurring near military bases. Scott Air Force Base was right there where these police officers were, and there has always been reports and rumors that there's some large triangular-shaped object hidden away in a hangar there that comes out late at night. We have on the coasttocoastam.com website, Richard, and I don't know if you have seen it yet, but what is called a TR-3B, which is a tactical reconnaissance plane, that is a triangle. And I am wondering, and let's take size away for just a moment, I am wondering if this is one, a real object. Do you believe that our government has this kind of craft already?
Yeah, I think probably. I mean, we have to remember, though, anyone listening, that there are a lot of people who have talked about the TR-3B, and this is, for those who may not know, it's alleged to be a perfectly triangular planform. I mean, a perfect triangle, which, of course, there are no official aircraft that are of such shape, and yet people have been seeing these triangles for some time. I think that that is probably the answer. Yeah, I think that there are deep black programs, U.S. military programs that use this, and it's also, you know, said to it's a kind of high altitude reconnaissance, according to some people. Yet we see these things flying very, very low. So, but you know, what are they doing? What is their mission? And they've been secret for the longest time.
Yeah.
What wars are they being used in? And what's the whole point of these?
Absolutely. And here's the other thing. What's their propulsion? Because those people who are witnessing, seeing these objects, apparently they're going very slow, then they can go very fast. There's no sound. They make 90-degree turns, which you cannot do with a conventional aircraft. How are they moving?
Yeah. There's a variety of theories as to how they work, but I mean, George, I'm not convinced that any of these are really nailing it, in my opinion. The Illinois sighting, for example, this was a silent object. It was about 2 to 3, you know, very low altitude, and accelerated instantly,
and
according
big.
To the last officer who saw it. And then, right, these things stop. So, you know, one practical question I really wish people would ask more. I try to ask it every opportunity. It's one thing to ask a straightforward scientific question, you know, who are these beings operating UFOs, and is this our own technology and whatever, but what makes these things go? I mean, after all, we are staring right down the road at a potential petroleum crisis, as many people believe is anyway.
Well, now they're talking about $80 a barrel in a couple of years for oil. $80 a barrel, which means that at the tanker, we're going to be paying $5 a gallon here.
Well, demand is going through the roof. World petroleum demand, this is related to UFOs in a way. World petroleum demand is going up at about 4% a year. I don't know if that sounds like a lot to people, but it's tremendous. That gives you a doubling rate of every 17 years.
Yeah.
And I don't care how much of whatever you've got, of any supply, you can't just keep doubling your demand that quickly and not run out. And so, you know, right now OPEC is pumping full. You know, they're going as fast as they can to keep up with global demand, and they still can't keep up.
Well, if this object is man-made, did we get the plans from some kind of alien technology to build it?
Well, you know, I'm speculating here as much as anyone else you would ask on this. I mean, I don't have documentation. I try to distinguish always between what I absolutely know and what I think I know. And in this case, what I think is the case is that it's reasonable to assume that we got some of this from elsewhere. Yes, mm-hmm. I do believe that. And I believe that because there is a long, long history of legitimate UFO sightings by military personnel. There are also no shortage of very, very good, inside, reliable people who have said at deep, deep levels there are programs to reverse engineer alien technology and study bodies. In fact, one of these people is a man who walked on the moon. That's astronaut Edgar Mitchell of Apollo 14. He said this publicly many times. You got a lot of people talking. I think that there's something going on there. And so it would be logical to me to believe that the TR-3B is one such result.
Okay, well, we've got a picture of it on the coasttocoastam.com website, those of you who want to take a look at it. This is not as big as some people have reportedly seen, and that's something else that I find to be fascinating, yeah. Richard, because...
Well, there's a TR-3A and a TR-3B, and one is said to be really huge, and one is said to be kind of like the size of a comparable to like a, you know, a fighter plane type thing.
Like a stealth plane or something like that. Okay. Another thing, while we have a few minutes this half hour, you wrote an interesting article on UFO disclosure, but you wrote about the late Dr. Michael Wolff. And it is the late Dr. Wolff now, isn't it?
I don't believe I wrote about him.
Okay.
Not sure that I did, George. Sorry.
You sure?
Pretty sure.
It says, it's got your name on it. It says, at the end of June 1999, telephone conversation with Dr. Michael Wolff, a consultant, and it's got your name, Richard, okay.
Is that Boylan?
Okay, yep, that's Boylan. Boylan.
No problem.
Boylan. They've got the B looks like a D, so that's not you. Okay, anyways, but Dr. Wolff, he is dead now, isn't he?
Yes.
He was a giant in the government, and at the same time said things that... I think would have made anybody just wake up and go, oh my God. He talked about our government knowing things, seeing things, ETs.
Yes, correct.
And this guy was a consultant to the National Security Council's Special Studies Group.
Yeah, well, what he said, I mean, from what he had written and what has, I think, been accurately said, that it discusses that the U.S. government had been in a communication with the ET guests who were at underground installations, and that that these guys had given the government, in fact, some of their anti-gravity craft and a lot of fuel, the element 115, for example, discussed by Bob Lazar,
right.
the energy system for this, and that there's much more going on there, and he is dead. You know, I think these types of inside accounts, we have to listen very carefully to them, because I think that there are people who are absolutely who are telling the truth here. But of course, my approach to the UFO phenomenon, I really want to make this clear to anyone who's listening. I do try to tread carefully in the sense of piecing together a history based on as verifiable a document chain as I can, and so. Whereas I'm inclined to think that, yes, there's absolutely a lot to what Dr. Michael Wolff was talking about, I'm still trying my best to make sure that I can put together a story that is confirmable and that I can defend.
It's unfortunate that nobody really seemed to listen to him.
Yeah.
And it's gone. It's lost now.
Well, he'll be in my next book.
Excellent. See, so I knew you were working on him.
Yeah, well, I'm doing everything I can to study. I mean, this topic, I'm still the novice. I feel like I'm just learning all the time. And the more I get into this field, I continue to run into people who are in so many ways so far more advanced along the road than I am.
Well,
I just try to keep up.
When we come back from the break, of course, your book, UFOs and the National Security State, a chronology of a cover-up from 1941 to 1973. That's book number one. Of course, you're working on book number two. Are you convinced, Richard, that indeed there is and has been an ongoing cover-up?
Yes, I am. Absolutely. I have. There are a lot of things on which I'm not so sure. But this is one thing on which I would say I'm quite sure. There is a real phenomenon involving real technology that is not supposed to exist, that does exist, that there are very, very... high-level people within our own society and probably on an international level who have got this information and they are not revealing it. Yes, I believe that.
When we come back, I want you to go through the scenarios with me on why our government and why governments in general are just not telling their people why these things are going on. And I'm sure we've got our own theories and we'll go through a lot of them. Maybe they think there's going to be widespread panic. Maybe they think that we won't be controlled. Who knows what it is? Maybe they think it is. is in the interest of national defense that they don't tell us. But we'll find out. We'll get your take on it. Richard Dolan, our guest. His website, by the way, is available just by going to the coasttocoastam.com website. Fascinating research. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
If I listened long enough to you, I'd find a way to believe that it's all true. Knowing that you lied straight-faced while I cried, still I look to find a reason to believe. Someone like you makes it hard to live without somebody else. Someone like you makes it easy to give. Never think about myself.
Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Gave a friend one of the After Dark CDs today. He took it, and I'll never get it back again. I was lending it to him. He thinks it was a gift. Oh, well. Well, you can pick it up. It's got great bumper music, phone calls to the program, the classic calls, and some great ghost stories. Go online at afterdarkcd.com. That's afterdarkcd.com. Or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. 1-800-598-2331. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Richard Dolan, our guest. Richard, let me throw out four possibilities that I've always thought about why government doesn't disclose to us. Get your thoughts on them, and then, of course, get your views on why we're not being told the truth. First and foremost, give me your reaction to the government's thought that there would be widespread panic around this world in this country. Is that possible?
Yeah. Sure, it's possible. It's hard really to predict. A lot of people refer to the 1938 Orson Welles War of the Worlds scenario, in which he went on the radio, did the play, and people thought it was real with this invasion from Mars, and there were people who just went absolutely nuts. I think there's going to be so much tremendous disruption, and panic is a real possibility. On the other hand, I don't know about you. I've talked with lots and lots of people just in my ordinary non-UFO related life, and people will say, well, I don't really know why the government's holding this back. I mean, I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to jump out of a window. I'm perfectly fine with it. So it's really not clear to me how widespread it would be. I think that there are going to be people who would be you know, shaken up by it, yes. And I think that there are people who would be able to deal with it and just say, yeah, so like we've known this all along.
Is it easy for those people to say that right now because they just really don't know? Faced with the fact that we have been visited, let's say,
right.
and there's a couple more scenarios on that as well. I don't know. I don't know if it'll be as easy as they say it will be.
Right. I think I'm not going to argue against that, George. I mean, there's a strong case to be made for it. On the other hand, my whole attitude is I have this naive idealist faith in this thing called the truth, and I believe in truth as a better foundation for your society than falsehood. And I look at it now, it's been 60 years almost, that this deception has really been foisted upon us.
Right. What if, all right, here's a second possibility here. What if these visitations aren't friendly at all, that there's something horrible behind it, whatever it may be?
Right.
We can't stop it. And so we take the approach, you know what, we're not going to say anything about it. If a few million people on this planet are taken every year and they're gone, we're just not going to get involved in this.
Right.
What about that possibility?
If they're bad ETs and we just can't do a thing about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's understandable. One can understand the rationale behind it.
I mean, they're not going to tell us. The president's not going to come on the air on a Thursday night and say to the American public, look, the UFOs are real. They are coming here. They've been coming here since mankind. They are taking people. They're eating them, doing whatever they're doing with them. But there's nothing we can do about it. But we want you to know about it. They're not going to tell us that.
Well, I don't know if you could say there's nothing people can do about it anyway. And I don't know. I mean, again, we're speculating. And, yeah, they could be really bad ETs, and they could be more powerful than us. And are we, you know, could we be defenseless? I guess, but not necessarily. I don't know. Are there things, I mean, for example, there are a lot of people who have said that, you know, they have had contact with these other beings,
mm-hmm.
and that these other beings think and speak or can be telepathic in some way, and that there's a psychic component to what they're all about. And what if human beings have some innate ability to deal with that as well? And we're just not, you know, not using it because we don't know to use it.
All right, what about the possibility that they just don't want the world to know what they know? So let's say national security.
Yeah.
Maybe we're getting technology, which I think we are,
right.
But they just don't want other countries to know that.
Yeah, well, I think that's happening. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah,
and very likely there's a combination of rationalities rationalizations that are going on at this. I mean, I go back to I try to think about what would Harry Truman have done in 1947 or 48. You know, mm-hmm. becoming aware of this, some general comes up to him and says, "Mr. President, we've recovered this technology that doesn't seem to belong to us, and indeed these appear to be extraterrestrials." I mean, sure, I can understand Truman for many reasons, at least initially, wanting to hold off on disclosing this. After all, America wasn't even willing to share its atomic technology with the world at that time.
Sure.
So why share something as exotic as alien technology or knowledge of these aliens? It's not hard to see that at all. But, of course, the problem is that secrecy develops its own life. And so it has its own kind of momentum that continues. And I mean, I've spoken with a few people who are absolutely legitimate, deep black world type people who are very impressive individuals, and they've just said to me, look, this program to study this technology is so deeply compartmentalized. I mean, they said, you'd be amazed at how secret this stuff is.
Congress doesn't even know about it.
No way. They do not.
All right. Now, the title of your book, the first one here, UFOs in the National Security State, Chronology of a Cover-Up, 1941 to 73. Now, one would think, all right, it is a cover-up, and then you mention National Security State. Maybe it has something to do with all this. So my question then to you, Richard, is why aren't they telling us what's going on?
Well, because this is a phenomenon that dropped, as it were, into the lap of our national security people back in the 1940s. They had the best ability to detect these UFOs. They had the electronic means to do so, like radar, and they had aircraft up in the sky. They were more able to encounter, I think, these things than a lot of other people were. and it came down to an issue of power. I go back to the technology angle. I mean, if let's say you're a scientist and you're charged with studying this stuff at deep, deep, deep levels. I imagine it would be so far advanced from what you have at that time. It would take you years to even come up with rudimentary ideas, perhaps, on what you might be able to do with this. But let's say 5-10 years go by and you come across a really great idea, and you think, wow, we can make this, you know, type of technology off of this thing. Well, you've got a great ground floor investment opportunity as well as an awesome, technology advantage in the Cold War and all other kinds of things. In other words, there's no incentive to reveal this secret once you have it. And, you know, it's judging by the UFO phenomenon, there are people who have had a variety of interactions with these other beings, or at least they've said that they have. Some of these interactions are not good. Some of these interactions are not necessarily negative. And so it's not clear to me that you're dealing with one group of beings anyway, to be honest with you.
There could be many.
Right, there certainly could be. George, I wonder if I can just take a moment. I learned something earlier today that I think is of interest to yourself and to the
sure.
people who are listening.
Sure, what is it?
Well, I just learned the highest ranking officer of the Vatican who's ever spoken, you know, publicly about UFO and ET reality is Monsignor Corrado Balducci, who is now 82 years
mm-hmm.
old. Many people know about this man. Is coming to the United States for the first time to speak here in the U.S. I'm going to be at this particular conference, and I just wanted to mention this one time, and I hope you're okay with this, which will be in Washington, D.C. this September for the X conference. Which I just think is an absolutely awesome opportunity. And Balducci has not been to the U.S. in almost 40 years, and he is now coming here. And he's, as I say, he's in his 80s. He has not spoken officially on behalf of the Vatican, but, you know, my feeling has always been you get someone this high up who is speaking in this capacity. I think that there's a lot of times an understanding that one is not going to be doing this officially, and nevertheless, he's being allowed to say certain things about the reality of ET. And this is, you know, a major, major person in the Vatican,
oh,
and he will be
huge
at the X conference.
I know Paula Harris knows him. Is he speaking on behalf of himself or the Vatican?
He will be the keynote speaker at the X conference, and he is always officially speaking for himself. That's how he always puts it. I would simply recommend if someone is interested to please, you know, go to x-conference.com and just look it up. And I really want to for people to know and for them to support this because, you know, this man is now toward the end of his life. Americans have not really had much of an opportunity to hear him, to hear what he has to say. So I think it's just a wonderful opportunity.
And he may be speaking through a translator. I think Paul
yes.
said he doesn't speak
right.
English at all.
There will be a translator, and it's just going to be at the end of April in D.C.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. No, my pleasure. I love UFO stories. And every time I get a fascinating guest on, such as yourself, Richard, who is in on the know and has done some homework, I always ask them to give me their very favorite UFO story. Do you have one?
Well, yeah, I guess I do. There's one of those UFO stories, like when I was researching my book in particular, there were just a few of them that I would just look at these reports and just go like, whoa. And it happened for me in looking at these government documents. I mean, the way that I put my book together was to try to piece together a very logical, easily confirmable paper trail. And so there are a lot of stories that are actually much more far out than even the ones that I included, but I really tried to be cautious in the sense. But there were a number of these U.S. memos. We got a lot of them through the Freedom of Information Act, in particular when that act was actually in its prime in the late 1970s, when it was really possible to get some good documents out. It's much more difficult now. But there were a variety of airspace violations over U.S. bases and U.S. sensitive installations. And there's one, for example, that took place over the Oak Ridge nuclear facility in 1953. And this is a quote from one such report. This is a classified report that describes this object that came over Oak Ridge. And Oak Ridge is a big deal. I mean, they developed the atomic bomb.
Of course.
You don't just hang out over Oak Ridge. And yet.
And this is a real report.
This is a real report. And this is just one. I'm hunting this. Here we go. A quote from the official report. It says, "Object was extremely black in color." This is 1953. "Having an appearance of a deep black metal exterior with a fine gloss, it did not leave a vapor trail. No sound was heard. The object flew east at a tremendous speed for what appeared to be 3 miles, where it stopped. The object was then joined by two more of these same objects. A formation similar to a spread V was formed, and the objects, at a tremendous speed, flew in an eastward direction."
I love it.
That's just like, wow. That's over 50 years ago.
Now, who wrote the report? Do you know that? Or title or anything like that?
Yeah, this was a confidential memo, and this is from the it's a memo from the Oak Ridge facility.
So somebody there, maybe a security guard or soldier, somebody there.
Yeah, and it was directed to the Adjutant General of the United States Military in Washington, D.C.
That's an incredible piece of documentation.
Now, right, and this is 1953. At the same time, of course, you've got the government telling people that there's nothing to this.
And we don't have stealth technology in 1953. We don't have these airships that we have today.
Right, it's amazing. This actually was from the third commanding general. It went through. It was from the Tennessee Military District in Nashville, is where it originated from, and it actually just went around the chain. This report.
See, to me, Richard, that's a major story. That's a front page New York Times story.
Exactly. When I was writing my book, George, I had this wonderfully naive idea. I thought, well, if I can only just put the facts together in a clear way, be kind of like a sledgehammer approach. You know, maybe, just maybe, that will make a difference, and people will get some publicity, and people will see that this is an inarguable reality. And of course, I feel rather instead that I'm just howling into a vacuum, because you can just talk, and there are always people who will listen, but as far as the larger, the mainstream media, it just doesn't happen. And the funny thing was, the day of the Peter Jennings ABC special.
Yeah.
Here in Rochester, New York, where I live, I was interviewed by local media. So the local ABC affiliate came to my home to interview me in preparation for the special, local UFO expert Richard Dolan, that type of thing. So I got 90 seconds, and I gave these people gold, George. laid gold at their feet, said, here's a great bit of information. Here's something else that's great. More than an hour, and they took 90 seconds and just hacked me to bits. it was, so they went in with a certain slant. It was obvious.
Welcome to television.
You bet. And so this is how you feel. I've gathered a tremendous amount of great information, and it's a challenge. You've got to get people to listen. And
wouldn't it be great to have on tape or on the radio or some kind of backup that person who witnessed those three objects and who wrote that report for the general?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, there are so many people today who are as intelligent and as reliable as the witnesses of that particular report, and you've spoken to many of them, and so have I. I remember a couple of years ago I was going through the website of the National UFO Reporting Center, organized by Peter Davenport,
yeah,
which was featured on the ABC special. And there was one sighting of a triangular craft. We were talking about the TR-3B on the last segment. I was doing a lot of triangle research in particular at that time, hunting down triangle reports that Peter Davenport had collected. And there was one from just across the lake here in Rochester, in Ontario, a woman who in January of 2002 was driving home from work, and a triangle came right over her car, and she said, like, right over.
Yeah.
Totally silent, and just, went right off. I had gotten in touch with this woman through Peter, and have since really chatted quite a lot with her. And, all I can say is she is absolutely 100% reliable. There's no question in anyone's mind who would talk to this person that she absolutely positively saw what she did. And this object, in addition to just looking unlike anything that's supposed to exist, did things that just, you know, you wouldn't expect from any ordinary aircraft.
The question is, was it theirs or ours?
That is the question. And one thing, you know, there's a very strong tendency for a lot of people in this field to say, oh, well, a lot of those are ours. And I would not deny that possibility, but I will say this. One thing that I learned when I kind of dived into this field is that I would develop, you know, a variety of contacts, or, you know, at the classified level myself. Not that I'm an insider in any way, I'm certainly not. But every now and then I would glean the conversations going on in that world. Every now and then. I think a lot of UFO researchers are in this situation. And one thing that struck me, there were two things. One was that people within the intelligence world who were truly in the know, they first thing is they took ET for granted. They took the ET reality here on Earth as a given. And that, initially for me, was a startling kind of revelation. But the other thing was that there was a debate, at least among several of them, and these are high-level people, and the debate was not, is ET real, but rather, can we duplicate their technology? And there was one individual, for example, who said, you know, my sources tell me that, we've got some toys to play with, but we can't really duplicate this stuff. And another guy shot back, essentially, you know, what are you, under a rock? We've had this capability for a number of years, and in fact, so did the Soviets. And back and forth it goes, and both of these people are quite prominent. And, you know, reading these and following these debates, it's very difficult for me to know for sure where the truth is. My feeling is we've got some of this stuff.
I think we've got
some. Do we truly have all of it? I don't know.
I'm not sure. You know, if we plopped a helicopter down on people 2,000 years ago, I'm not sure they'd be able to figure it out, Richard, or make one. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right, right. Exactly.
And it's the same with us. I mean, even though we have a higher form of technology, I'm not sure we'd understand it right now. Let's come back in a moment. And when we do, Richard, let's assume that for a second, we are alone in this universe. It's kind of a lonely feeling. I want to get your take on that. And some other stories about the national security state, UFOs, and explain the cover-up. It occurred in 1941, maybe even before that. We'll find out. I'll be back.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505.